This show contains language and themes that may be considered offensive to some. Please use your best judgment about whether or not you should be listening. To Sci-Fi Noise. I'm your host, Derek Howard. Sci-Fi Noise is part of the Deliberate Noise Network and can be found at deliberatenoise.com/sci-fi. You can also find other shows on the Deliberate Noise Network at deliberatenoise.com. This particular episode is kind of going to be a little bit... I'm going to say free-willing, but all of them pretty free-willing. I don't really do a whole lot of research into this show. This is just basically things that are coming off the top of my head, things that I like and I'm remembering, just remembrances. It's always how it has been, except for the one episode where, you know, I forgot to put a whole section of what the show was actually about, you know. So, I apologize for that. Because I really like Defying Gravity, and I really wish more people had watched it. And who knows, maybe I had something in that section that would have gotten people to at least go out and buy the DVDs, you know. Which, you know, once I get the DVD, I will be talking about it in depth. To the point where people are like, wow, Derek, you're talking about this thing even though it was a failed show. But anyway, I want to talk about a different set of shows. One that I pretty much disregarded when it first came out, although it turns out that I didn't actually completely disregard it, and that's the show Farscape. My friend Aaron Makem over at Sci-Fi Dig is a big Farscape fan. And whenever he would talk about it, I just didn't know. I didn't get it because I've seen like maybe 6 or 7 episodes out of the 4 seasons that it was on. And I liked them. But at the same point, whenever one of the Muppets would pop up, I would just be like, are you kidding me? I just can't take this serious, you know? And that's part of, you know, the problem I have with the series. However, every now and then I like to watch shows in chunks. And I have Netflix. And when you have Netflix, they have the... I forgot what it's called now, but it's the instant Netflix, the viewing thing. They're streaming, Netflix streaming, whatever it's called nowadays. And they have at least... the first season, maybe the first 2 seasons of Farscape available. And since, like I said, I know very little about Farscape except it's the show with the Muppets, I decided to sit down and actually start watching it. And I just was going to just start with the pilot, you know, the very first episode. And if I liked it from there, I just wanted to see what was going on, you know, see what the whole... see what the whole thing was, you know, what the whole appeal was, because like I said, I just didn't get it. And for those of you who are unaware, it revolves around a story of a guy named Crichton, John Crichton, I believe, who is a NASA scientist, astronaut, just, you know, regular, well, not a regular astronaut, because let's face it, astronauts, those guys are like the closest to superheroes like Reed Richards that we'll ever get, you know, because these guys are all really smart and they're brave enough to get strapped to a rocket and go into outer space where there is no air. Anyway, so I'm not going to say a regular guy, a regular astronaut, because they do try to, the actor Ben Browder, I believe, plays him in a very ordinary type of, as an ordinary type of guy, when, let's face it, if he's an astronaut, he makes it to, you know, fly not only about a single man mission, then that means that you're not just an ordinary guy. You have to be extraordinary in order for that to happen. But he goes into outer space and something happens. He gets sucked into a wormhole and he's elsewhere. It's the best way I can put it. He's, I don't know if he's on the other side of the galaxy or if he's in another part, you know, another part of the universe completely. But luckily for him, he ends up in a place that has, you know, biped humanoids that are, you know, just basically look like humans, but, some are different colors. Like, one of the characters, Zahn, is like, blue. She's a bald-headed blue woman who wears robes, and she talks in a very soothing, priestly way, which is just kind of a trip when I find out who she was, because she looks so familiar. Her name is Virginia Hay, and I couldn't remember where I saw this woman at before. Turns out she was in one of my all-time favorite films, The Road Warrior. There, she was a one of the... she was one of the, well, she was actually one of the few women who had a speaking role, I believe. But she was one of the how can I put it, like, what did they call her? I can't remember. But she was like the kick-ass woman who helped Mad Max distract everybody, you know, when Lord Humongous's guys went after Mad Max in that big truck. There were a couple of people who went with him, and she was the woman with the headband who went with him. You know, she had longer hair then, obviously, but that's who that was. And, you know, I recognized her face. I just couldn't picture it, but, you know, I finally got it. There's also this guy who seems like a Klingon. You know, he talks like a Klingon or Narn from Babylon 5, the Klingon, of course, from Star Trek, where, you know, he has this very, you know, military bearing, right? If he went up against Worf, it would be, you know, a sci-fi geek's dream come true, because these guys look like they could probably handle each other, right? Or, you know, the Narn, especially before Jakar turned all touchy-feely, you know. One of those big, strapping, muscular, do not mess with me human types, you know. And then there was also the pilot of the ship called Moya. The ship is called Moya. The pilot, he's a Muppet, you know. I don't think he ever goes anywhere. I don't think he can move. And then there's also Rigel, who's this, he's another Muppet. But he's a Muppet who actually walks around and he eats, and he looks just like a Muppet who eats and walks around. He's like a king. And so he's very arrogant, and he's like their diplomat, because he knows how to talk to other arrogant people. When I was involved with a website about 10 years ago now, one of the guys who was involved with it was like really arrogant to the point of being obnoxious. And I always wondered why we kept him. But then when this person dealt with like record company people, it was very evident. You know, it was like nice guys would get eaten up by record label executives. But he was one of them. He spoke their language, you know. They were dismissive. He was dismissive. In fact, it was one of the reasons why I quit talking to the guy, because I'm sitting up there and we're all talking, and then he gave me a look like that, you know, and it just like turned his head like, you know, quit talking now. And I was like, okay, expletive deleted, you know. And that's what this Muppet seemed like. He's like the guy that you need to keep on hand in case you're dealing with other jerks, you know. So the first episode was getting Crichton onto the ship, where he meets these other guys who were all like running away from this army called the Peacekeepers, you know. Crichton had acts on the, in his shuttle, he accidentally killed some guy who turns out to be the brother of the guy who was in charge of the Peacekeepers. And, you know, the Peacekeepers are a bunch of badass soldiers. One of the badass soldiers ends up being on the wrong side of this army. And so she joins our ragtag group of people, you know, of humanoids. And unlike the stop you puny human guy who has like these things on his face, or the blue bald headed woman, or the Muppet, this one looks just like a regular, you know, Caucasian female with an Australian or New Zealand accent, you know. So I mean, the second she stepped on board, I just knew how these two characters were going to end up. You know, these two are going to end up together. You know, it's just, come on now. It's like on soap operas, you always have the black friend, and whenever there's a black woman who comes anywhere near the town, you know who's eventually going to end up together, you know. Anyway. So the first episode was about getting them together, getting the group together, you know, getting the band together, man. And it was pretty good. It was enjoyable. And I sat there, and even though I'm pretty sure that I might have had a better appreciation for the Muppets way back then, they still looked really cheesy, you know. They really still look cheesy. That is one aspect of the show that has not held up very well. But I went back for the second episode. And lo and behold, the second episode of Farscape was actually one of the six that I had already seen before. Now I can't remember what happened on it. But I do remember that I had seen it before. And then I think it was one like the ship was overheating. I've only seen the first four episodes. I'm probably going to end up watching the rest. And I might do a better review as going on. However, based on these four, I can see why Aaron likes it. This definitely has a syndicated sci-fi show feel to it. Same as like Andromeda. Or Earth Final Conflict, you know, or War of, well, not kind of quite like War of the Worlds, because the War of the Worlds TV show was really, really boring to me. But it's kind of like that, where you can see that they had enough of a budget for the sets and for some of the makeup and that kind of stuff. But really, once you get beyond that, they had to, there's a lot of shows, a lot of episodes so far that are based strictly on the ship. Okay. Because why not? You already have those sets built, you know? So I'm kind of interested to see where it goes. The Muppet, Rigel still bugs me. There's one thing where one of the episodes he was kidnapped, and when he's kidnapped and he's rescued, well, when he's kidnapped, they put him in a bag, okay? And they're carrying him around in a bag like he's a Muppet. When he's rescued, Crichton is still carrying him around like he's in a bag. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, if they decided to go with a little person instead of a Muppet, there's no way in hell they would be carrying him around in a bag. And that's one thing that bugs me, because they're treating him like a Muppet instead of like something that's alive, you know, a live person type creature thing. Anyway, so that's my little kind of semi-coherent review of the first few episodes of season one of Farscape. I'm probably at least going to finish this season, maybe go to the second one. I don't know if by the time, because I don't think they have season three, season four, or this movie called The Peacekeeper Wars. I don't think they have those on streaming yet, so who knows? I may eventually get around to them. But for right now, I'm just going to stick with what's streaming. Okay, now another movie that I saw recently was the movie Avatar. Now, this is a movie that you probably heard millions and millions of, well, I mean, not millions, you know what I mean, just a lot of millions, a lot of different reviews about, a lot of different people love this movie, you know, and because it's, you know, nominally a sci-fi flick, that's just one of the reasons why I'm talking about it. However, I don't really see it as a sci-fi movie. I mean, it was not really sci-fi. It was like an environmental movie with sci-fi trappings, you know. That's that same kind of movie could have been made on the planet Earth with a little bit of rewrite about Dances with Wolves, basically. Or, you know, maybe not Dances with Wolves, but one of those movies where a guy is, you know, surveying the rainforest and he ends up finding, you know, this indigenous tribe down there, and he falls in love and he turns against the evil corporation to help the indigenous tribe take over, you know. And that's what it was. That was what the movie was. Just with a lot of sci-fi aspects to it, you know. This is James Cameron. And I think that people forget that James Cameron, even though he is a good storyteller, and I know a lot of people now hate Titanic, but let's face it, it didn't sell all those tickets because nobody liked it. And you can't say, but well, it was a teenage girl, so I went to go see Leonardo DiCaprio over and over again. No, it was also the fact that, was it the last hour of that movie when the boat was sinking, was just excellent storytelling, you know. But there were a lot of parts, especially the whole military part, that reminded me of like the beginning of Aliens, the Sigourney Weaver movie, who of course again makes another appearance in this movie. I really liked it. I thought that, you know, like a lot of people, I thought that the special effects, the visual effects were excellent. Best movie ever? No, not even close. I'm also a person who doesn't think that it should have been even nominated for cinematography, because a lot of the stuff looked like it was done on a green screen. You know, I could be wrong. I could be one of those people who didn't like, Planet of the Apes beat 2001, I believe, for the Oscar for best makeup, because the Academy believed that the primates at the beginning of 2001, A Space Odyssey, were actually monkeys. They didn't believe that was a makeup job. So, you know, that's why, you know, because they were so good, it was held against them. And I could be one of those people that, because everything looked like it was done on a green screen, I'm holding the cinematography against it, you know, because it was done so well. But he did make a very interesting world, you know. Now that it looks, you know, and I'm talking about in the future, now that it looks like the story of the evil corporation is ended, I'm really curious to see about the working of the rest of the planet, you know. Now, of course, the evil corporation is going to have to make a return, because, you know, what would a James Cameron movie be without, you know, an evil corporation of some sort being around, you know? The same evil corporation that locked all those people in steerage, you know, in Titanic. Or the same evil corporation that that was behind the events of Aliens, you know? Or the same evil corporation that created Skynet in the Terminator movies, you know. So there's like always an evil corporation behind. So if he's going to ever make a sequel to this, and he's only, as far as I can remember, he's only made one other sequel to a movie that he created. Because I don't believe he did Alien. I know he did Aliens, and then he was done with that franchise, but I know he did Terminator and Terminator 2 Judgment Day, and then he was done with that franchise. So if he makes this, it'd be interesting to see where he goes with the story. And hopefully, if he does make a sequel, that he put more emphasis on the story, since now he knows he can pretty much do whatever he wants. And I'm going to go out there on a limb and say this, because I know a lot of people may not agree with me, but I would love to see him do a Superman movie. Because the thing for the original Superman, the movie, was you can believe a man can fly. You will believe a man can fly. And, you know, you look at it now and you really can't. But on that, in Avatar, you really could believe that, you know, a giant bird thing can fly. Okay, sorry about that. I don't know if you could hear the dog barking incessantly in the background. But I had to put an end to that foolishness. Yeah, I think that since he can make it appear as though a totally totally made up creature can fly, and it looked pretty damn realistic, I think he can do a good job on making Superman fly. Or if he was really, really smart, he would start his own superhero franchise. I think he could do it. You know, I think he could probably succeed where things like Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow and Zoom and Meteor Man all failed, and that's like create an original franchise of superheroes. He could do it. All he has to do is just hook up with somebody who knows what they're doing and put together a story. And if he didn't do a Superman, I would love to see him, if he's going to adapt something. Alan Moore's, you know, some of Alan Moore's run on Swamp Thing, you know. That would be cool. But, you know, that's just me doing fantasy booking, basically. But, I would recommend Avatar. Now, I only saw the 2D version. I did not see the 3D version. Apparently, it's a lot better. But I wear glasses, and I feel like a tool, you know, wearing glasses over glasses. If somebody could make, like, one of those things that you can put over your glasses and you can see 3D, sort of like they have for glasses to, you know, convert regular glasses into sunglasses. They could do that for 3D. I probably would go see 3D movies more often. And since that's the new thing nowadays, to have 3D movies, why not? And they apparently look better than the ones did when I was a kid, you know, like Gorilla at Large or was it Friday the 13th Part 3 in 3D or was it Jaws 3 in 3D? So I don't know. I'd check them out. Anyway, that's going to be it for the episode. It's kind of a short one, but hopefully you liked it. Hopefully it can kind of made up for Defying Gravity. The messed up episode, and hopefully I remembered to put all the pieces together for this one so that it all at least makes sense. Anyway, thanks for listening. If you have any feedback, please send it to Derek@deliberatenoise.com. That's Derek. I would appreciate it. Please stop by the website at deliberatenoise.com/sci-fi. You can leave a comment there in the blog post. Or you can call the audio comment line. That's the Deliberate Noise audio comment line. For any of the shows on the Deliberate Noise Network, I'll just make sure it goes to where it's supposed to go. That's area code 734-274-5919. And I'd appreciate that as well. Anyway, thanks for listening, and I will be back soon. We'll be right back.
this couple was going to leave.